champions, our guest today is, I'm not sure I need to introduce him, but I will do anyway. Former world number 2 and one of the very few people on earth who have ever crossed the 2800 rating mark. A 3-time Olympic champion with Team Armenia, 2-time winner of the FIDE World Cup, winner of countless elite events. Weekanze, Linares, Grand Slams and Lewis Cup, the list goes on. But beyond the trophies, he is known for his creativity, his humor, the joy he brings to the chessboard and everyone around him. Please welcome Grandmaster Levon Aronyan. Levon, my friend, thank you very much for accepting my invitation and coming to Chessmood Podcast.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
I was preparing for the interview and in the morning I was playing a little bit with AI. So I asked interesting questions about you. So one of them I asked him, who is the most joyful grandmaster? And I asked this question to different AIs. So one of them said, easy, without a second thought, Levon Aronyan. Some said that you were in the top 5, some different answers. But like whoever said in the list that you were not there, I deleted that AI. So it cannot be the list of joyful grandmasters without you.
That's the way to go.
Tell me, please, where does this joy come from? And most importantly, how do you protect it?
The joy comes, I think, from gratitude. You know, all my life I've been very lucky. All my life I've met amazing people. And I went through a lot of challenges, of course, tragedies. But the main thing for me is to be grateful and to love the world. So this is my philosophy. And to love the people. And, you know, if I can inspire somebody or make somebody's life better, I will be happy. So, and that's what the source of joy comes from, I think. I look at the world with the eyes of somebody who's very curious, a curious child, and I try to stay pure and I try to avoid any temptations and just to be, just to have the inner child, a curious and an innocent child. That's what I try to be.
That's a, to say, beautiful answer. It will be just cliche, so I will tell you a little bit why I felt this way. A few months ago, I went through some difficult period, dark period, one of the toughest periods in my life. And then I said, okay, it's enough. I need to heal myself. And I built my own meditation system, five-step system. And the first step, it was gratitude. And it's been already a long time that every morning I'm doing it. And then also on top of that, I decided to write one gratitude letter every morning. And it completely changed everything. Today I wrote another one. It was day 52, since every day I'm writing. And you said about gratitude as a, because it's so often we can focus on the dark part when there is so much light. We can focus that sun is gone and forget about the stars and the moon while still they are there. And it's our decision where we focus, right?
Yes.
You also said in your answer that you try to avoid temptations.
Yes.
What kind of temptations?
Well, I think, you know, I am... from the early age, I think maybe I was 16, 17, I was always curious about philosophy and I was always curious about psychology. And I do think that the theory of Jung about the, you know, the shadow. And I do believe in this fully. I believe that you have to know your dark side. You have to know the bad things in you in order to be able to fight them. You know, you need to accept them as, and of course, in life, you know, especially if you're in a high position, if you're successful in your job, you get so many temptations. There are so many things you can do wrong. And and it's, maybe it will not come to bite you back. But, you know, if you can avoid them, you'll be happy, you know? What I mean is, By saying wrong, I mean to betray your principles, to do certain things that you feel that are not good for your soul, let's say.
Betray your principles. Remember when we were walking and you told me about how Mike Tyson was not fearless? And that
yes.
was a lesson I took to my life, that he used this fear into motivation. And after years, I even wrote an article about that. And after years, I asked back to you, what are the fears that you had? Do you remember your answer?
No.
So you said...
If I remember my answer, it means I'm not growing. So it means I have to forget my answer.
That's interesting. So you said that the number one sentence you said, it was that you were afraid to live boring life.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one, you said about what you just said. You said you are happy who you became, that you avoided temptation and you kept your principles. That was your answer. It was three sentences.
Well, my principles are simple. Don't do anything that you think will harm somebody. Yeah. And also, you know, take care of your family. Don't let anybody hurt your family. Those are simple principles.
True, and I think it's even more difficult to not do harmful thing to ourselves. We want to do something temporarily, some temporarily dopamine boost, some temporarily satisfaction. Mm. And it's often becomes very difficult to do that temptation. And we know like lots of stories from professionally successful people who couldn't avoid the temptation and things went a little bit wrong. So I guess they also knew that it's like temptation, but they couldn't resist it. How do you resist it? How do you keep it? Is it like just super awareness?
I think it's when I'm facing good challenges in life, you know, quite often, you know, you're in a situation where actually things are not going your way. And then I start thinking to myself, remembering psychology and philosophy, the moment of the lowest point, the moment of the crisis, is the moment that you can actually, you're in a chaos, and this is a chance to change. And this is a chance to reinvent yourself. And the lowest crisis is a moment of opportunity. Yeah. But it can also be a moment when you will fall lower if you are not looking at it from a position of, okay, let me think what I'm going to do. Like, okay, right now I have a problem. Let's say I have a problem. I don't have money. Some people are upset with me and I don't have a job. Okay. Now that I'm in a situation, well, I don't have a job, so I don't have to be afraid to lose my job. You know, I can start reinventing myself. I can start kind of thinking, maybe this is not what I am. Like, for example, a great example for me was always actually your career. I remember when you were playing, you were always very motivated. You were always working very hard in chess. But at some point you felt, even though you had somebody who believed in you, it was some kind of a manager. I remember you had a manager who was kind of supporting your chance. But you realized that this is where I've got and I need to reinvent myself. And you have reinvented yourself. You started playing poker. Then you reinvented yourself again. And, you know, it's a great example. It's a great example. You hit the low in order to change and go somewhere else.
Wow. Thank you, man. Recently, I recorded my best games, 10 best games. And in the game 9, I recorded the worst game in my life, how I lost it, how it was catastrophe. Everything was bad in my life. And I went and stood in front of the mirror and I yelled at myself, like, I'm going to change everything. And that was the day, that the lowest day, that I decided, okay, I'm stopping professional chess and I'm switching to career and I'm going to do something slow, something another. And the lowest moment of the life, the crisis, it can be big moment. So we have a good friend, Armen, our mutual friend, who brought lots of interesting ideas from China, and you love China's food. I just recalled, I think you will be familiar with their what stands the hieroglyph for crisis. Do you remember it?
It's no.
Two characters, the hieroglyph for crisis.
No, I don't even know it.
Huh? So it's two. It's very nice. It's two characters. One stands for danger.
Uh-huh.
The second one stands for opportunity.
Yeah, see?
That's the hieroglyph for crisis. Do you think this joyful attitude giving you edge over the board?
I don't know. I don't know if it gives me an edge or it gives me, you know, a disadvantage. But
how do you play when your mood is not good?
Yeah, well, when your mood is not good, definitely you don't play too well. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But yes, generally, I think we need to find ourselves. You know, we need to find who we truly are and then just try to be better and try to learn. And that also applies to chess. For example, when you look at the games of some of my heroes, let's say Alekhine or Korchnoi, these guys were continuously growing, yeah? Continuously changing, continuously evolving. And that's what I'm striving to do. And to do that, I have to be joyful. I have to be hopeful. And also, you know, you have to believe in a dream. A dream is something that is very important. You know, even now, so this year, we finally had the Babson task. So there is this kind of a dream that one composer, chess composer, had, I think, in 1870s. So the dream was that his opponent would promote to a piece, and he would have to promote to the same piece, and that would be the only winning continuation.
Uh-huh.
And many chess composers, this was a challenge, but this was a real dream. And from 1870s, or maybe 1880s, I don't remember exactly, they tried to do it. They tried to, they looked for it, they looked for it, they looked for it. And I think in January of this year, obviously it was all based on something that was done before by some other composers, but finally a pure version of this puzzle existed.
It solved it, huh? Wow.
And this would never exist if the dream wasn't there. How, even if the dream is impossible, even if a dream is crazy, and it has to be there. I mean, right now, even when I think about this, right now I'm in San Sebastian.
Mm-hmm.
How I ended up buying a property here was also a dream. I was walking one time with Gabi. We were in the port. We were playing a tournament here. We got under some heavy rain. And in order not to get the cold, we went to the port, we ordered some fish, and we drank ourselves away. And we came home, and I to the hotel we were staying during the Spanish League, and I told Gabi, you know what, Gabi? I promise you that one day I'm going to buy a property here.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, and this was a dream. This was something I was dreaming, and I went for it. So,
did he promise himself something and he got there, or he did this mistake of not promising?
I don't remember him promising something about San Sebastian, but maybe he promised something in Canacare. I wasn't there.
What's your next dreams that you can share with us?
So I'm, I think I'm dreaming of small things that might be small for other people, but for me, they're big.
I dream to be
in such a good state that I will have more time to spend with my daughter, to be more in her life, because Right now she's with my in-laws, and I have tournaments coming, so yeah, I dream to be to have the energy and the possibility to spend more time with her.
How your life should look like so you have that.
When I think about it, okay, I should definitely have a second, and I should definitely have more physical energy. So this is something that I need to focus on. Yeah. You know, because of course you can get tired if you spend too much time with the child and too much time with chess. And you need to kind of balance the things, yeah. But yeah, I really want to spend more time with my daughter, with my wife, and dedicate myself more to chess and also get in a better physical shape. So many dreams, many dreams.
What's your process of getting into better physical shape and having more energy? What steps are you taking now?
Well, that's if I knew it, I would be there. So, yeah, I probably need a good coach. Probably need a good physical coach. I should hire you. You're an expert on those
No,
things.
I can teach you kung fu, but not maybe not physical.
No, I used to run, and I was playing very good chess by then. But then I tore Achilles. Now I cannot run anymore. So.
I never asked you this. Have you ever worked with peak performance coaches?
Well, I worked with Armen, you know, with, yeah, and he's a
Armand.
psychologist. I did work with a psychologist, it was also very beneficial for me. At certain point, I more or less know some techniques, you know. But yeah, I remember I had one very disappointing tournament where I had the psychologist, but I think the best psychology is knowing your chess openings and having the confidence. So that's what I focused on recently.
You said about your dreams of having more energy, spending more time with your family and your daughter. You didn't mention anything about specifically chess dreams, becoming the world champion, getting to X rating.
Well, I don't have that dreams. I want to play chess, and you know, I enjoy playing chess, but I don't have a dream of becoming a world champion.
You never had?
I did. But
And when did you drop it?
at some point I was kind of, I told to myself, you know, this is not a dream that I want to have.
Wow, do you remember when it was?
You know, maybe, I think maybe it happened after Arian's death. I kind of put myself back. I wanted to focus on my life, on my well-being, instead of following a dream like that.
After you dropped this dream of becoming the world champion and focusing on the process and on the game itself, I bet you felt happier about chess.
I would say happier is probably not the exact word, but I focusing for me became easier because when you have a dream, you have this very high expectations, and but when you have no expectations, you have no disappointments. And I think it's foolish to expect things from life. You know, you should accept everything with grace instead of just expecting things to happen your way.
Currently, I'm working with a very interesting person. He's an elite coach. He's 73, born in India and moved later to the USA. And now he's working with, he has taught in top business schools. Now he's working with elite entrepreneurs. For some reason, he accepted me as his student, and now we are working with him. And this is one of the difficult things, that the how to balance between the ambition of going your path and at the same time not let the eventual outcome to decide either whether you will be happy or not. And one of the interesting things I learned from him was that from our childhood we are learning to be unhappy. And I was like, wait, what? And his idea was that we are buying into this if-then model. If I learn good at school, I will get a good job. If this happened, if this happened, I will buy a car, then I will be happy. If I get this rating, I will be happy. And then it's like wrong. It's you should just go with that. Still have a goal, purpose, and use it as the destination where you are going, as a your roadmap, but not tie your happiness to that.
But aren't we supposed to persevere? Doesn't it teaches you toughness when you're unhappy and you still go for it? You know, I think in some way the stoicism, it cannot be full, because I remember I was growing up with this stoic sense of mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when I was about 30, I've got to work with a psychologist, and he said, this is not the way to go. It's good for you up to a certain point, but then you need to start rewarding yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You need to give yourself a lot of love. And yeah, I think we need to, you know, this is always kind of a way of transition, yes? And a long time ago, actually, when I was about 20, I've read this very interesting book. It was in the title, the original title, I think, is Glas Perlenspiel. It's a book by Hermann Hesse. Mm-hmm. I've read it in Russian, and in English, I think the title is The Beat Game. And it's about it's about this imaginary world where people play a game that is a fusion of music, mathematics, arts, and different things. But the book is very long and very it's very slow. But in the end, it has two stories. And one of these stories, actually, it took me 10 years to understand. And
wow.
Actually, I'm going to tell you, and I want to hear your
opinion.
Yes,
please.
So the story goes like this. There are two priests in different cities, but not far from each other. And they serve their community. One of the priests is a person who is extremely loud and extremely angry. And he tells to the people who come to him, this is not the way to be. This is terrible. And, you know, you have to go on the right ways. And, okay, don't come back until you solve your problems. The second priest in the other city, he just listens to the confessions, hugs the person, gives them a kiss, gives them a blessing, and sends them on their way without telling them a thing. And so years pass.
Without telling them?
A thing.
Okay,
nothing.
Just, yeah.
Years pass. One day, both of them, they decide to meet without notifying the other one, one another. And so the priest, who's the quiet one, he comes to a certain place on the way to the town. And he meets a person, and he understands that this is the guy. You know, this is the other, the angry priest. So he comes to the other angry priest, and he says, I want to serve under you. Please accept me as your student. And please let me serve for you. And so they accept. They move to the city where the angry guy was. And they start working. End of the story. So for many years, I don't know, 10, 15 years, I had no idea. I couldn't understand the thing. I was thinking, why is this guy who's just listening, blessing, why is he asking to serve to the other guy? You know? And is he worse, or does it mean he's serving is not something that, you know, he's going like under the other guy, but just helping him? And then I got it. But I want to hear your opinion. What do you think that the moral of the story is?
Difficult, man. I've read Hermann Hesse's Siddhartha, and at the end, it ends in a way that you can like, what was it? So his books are like, maybe I will take it and get back to you in 10 years, like
okay,
you said. Not easy. Not easy.
So
the
way I understood it.
Yes, please.
The angry guy is the truth. And the quiet guy is love. And love has to come after the truth. Love cannot come in front. First, you need to apply the truth, tell the bad things, you know, get it out of your system, you know, and kind of to person who you love, and then apply the love. Otherwise, it's not going to work. You cannot help a person. Does it make sense?
Very debatable. Very debatable thing.
But if you want to help, if you want to help yourself as well.
Yeah.
You look up yourself in the mirror, you see the drawbacks, you see your minuses as a person. And you tell all those things to yourself. And then you give yourself love. You're kind of saying, okay, you know, yes, this is something that we need to do, and we're going to do it, but we're going to be happy about it. And I forgive myself for not doing something that I had to do, but now I will do it, I promise.
Well, makes sense. That's a nice way of putting together. I'm just thinking, it can be there a place where actually love should come first, but whatever there is, no, I will think about that, and we will come back to that. Either we'll sit together and talk, or we will have another episode and we'll go deeper. But it is something, you know, sometimes you hear things that you just need to sleep with the idea. You need to just let there sink with it and think a bit. And just like you spent 10 years there, now it will be easier for me because you explained it. But I think I cannot right now. It's just, I cannot talk about that.
Of course.
This is something deep. Which
right.
comes first, the truth or the love? Because maybe in some cases the love comes first. This is something.
In the end of the day, what I tell you now is supposed to influence you. And if you answer me now, it's not going to be your opinion.
Yeah.
It's going to be something that your opinion influenced by me. So, of course, you need to sit down and think about different examples where this actually applies. And that's the beauty of the debate. That's the beauty of talking to each other and learning and understanding. Of course, if you have an open mind.
Of course. Yeah, open mind. It's one of the books that I would love that everyone read would be Carol Dweck, Mindset. Explaining that there is flexible mind and there is fixed mind. So having beginner mind, flexible mind is a big advantage.
I've never read that book, but I agree with
that. I guess you know the concept that you already learned. I don't think there will be lots of new things for you. But this is something that just many years ago, when you talk about fear, how it can be motivation, I took it with me. And this is something that I'm going to think about it. And maybe it will also be one of the things that I'm taking from you. And there are lots of lessons, man, from you. One question I have is, Lev, you went through like lots of difficult periods, difficult periods. You know, even when I asked AI, besides joyful, what are the things that you would say about Aronian? He said three things. Creative, He's most joyful grandmaster, he's most creative grandmaster. In Lisa said he's the most resilient grandmaster. And I was like, yeah. I have been at your home. It's one of your darkest days. So I have seen you, and you are really like resilient. And I don't know whom I have seen more resilient than you. Yeah. So during this, all these difficult periods, yeah, do you have already a formula of getting back, or each time you are getting back differently? So one of the things that we talked already, it's like crisis, that low moment can reinvent yourself. This is, I guess, one of the things. But overall, do you have any other formula already? Developed formula, or it's just...
No, I think I just follow my heart. But of course, you know, in difficult moments, it's good to rely on some friends, you know, to open your heart to them and to get support from them. These are, I think, important things, because when there is too much happening in your life and you're alone and, you know, you are hurting, sometimes it's very hard to be on your own. Yeah. And I'm happy I had Armen, you know, my closest friend, Armen Ağzımcan, who helped me in so many different stages of my life that, yeah, I consider himself to be my big brother. And there are other friends that I relied on who helped me out a lot. So, yeah, it's a blessing to have the friends. And I don't think there are any kind of recipes, you know, how to get out of... a miserable state or a tragic state. I think just having people who can actually hear you and who can actually advise you, and that's, I think, is the key.
Nice. One thing I have this, and I want to learn it from you. I'm practicing different things. I had a problem when I was playing professional chess, when things are very bad outside the chess. Mood is not there, but you need to go to the game. The game is there. You cannot avoid it. How do you just keep outside world there? You focus there. How do you do that? Because that same issue I still carry with me from chess world to professional life. Now at chess mode, there are days that things are not going, but I should focus there. How do you do such days?
Well, I cannot say that I'm great at focusing when I'm distressed, but I've played a lot in a state that I was really in a terrible mental state. But I think it's all about survival. You know, in the end of the day, I always remember the lessons I learned from nature. I look at certain dogs, for example. You know, we see many stray dogs in Armenia, and some of them don't have a leg. And they're smiling, and they're walking, and they're doing their best. They're doing the best they can. They just go, they get a little, they find a little piece of bread somewhere in the dirt, and you see their smile, and you see their joy in their life. And you understand that this is the biggest lesson for us, you know? The gratitude and perseverance.
That's strong. And also the idea of that you are watching at nature and taking lessons from nature. Recently I read something very interesting, and I think you will be interested in this. Have you ever heard of the book In Search of Sacred India?
No.
Well, as you love India and you love lots of things in philosophy, I think you will love this book. There will be interesting thing, and plus you should be open-minded for reading it, and
absolutely.
I'm sure you are. So it will be interesting read for you. Why I recalled about this? So the European with vast philosophy goes to India to look in the East philosophy and understand all these things. And he is meeting lots of sages, lots of holy men, interview exam, eventually writing the book with all his experiences about different people. And one of the sages tells him that he can stop the breath, he can stop breathing for hours. And it's like, no way, you cannot do that. West science say you cannot do that. And the guy showed that he can do. And this European, his name is Paul, the writer, he's very astonished, like, how? And then he says, he goes farther, he said, I can do it for days. Like, how? And the answer is, why you are surprised? In the nature, there are animals that your Western science agrees that they are stopping their breaths for months.
Yes.
To survive, when it was cold and there was this, there are animals who can stop their breath for months. So we human, we didn't evolve because we didn't need that. So why you are surprised if animals can do? why you don't think that we can do too? And, you know, even in martial arts, yeah, we were speaking about that I was doing Kung Fu, yeah, and maybe one day I will train you. There are lots of things that it's based on animals, how animals are fighting. In the Kung Fu especially, there are these monkey, tiger, snake. So your answer that you said is about survival and doing your best, and you are taking a lesson from a dog without a leg. It's a strong answer. Also, you just said to the answers that you don't think that you are best for focusing. Yet at the same time, I remember when we were playing in Olympiad, it was the only time I came with the team, I saw you with my eyes, how before the games, you would laugh, you would make jokes, you would make everyone relax, maybe at the same time, over relaxing your opponent, I don't know. But when the arbiter would say 1 minute to start, like this, you would focus and you would completely change and become another person.
And yes, I think so. I have work ethics. So for me, dedicating myself and finishing the job is very important. And I love working. Sometimes I don't have a clear goal, like preparing for chess, and I get lazy. But when I know that I have to do this particular thing at this particular hour, then I have very good work ethics. Yes. So I think it comes from there. It stems from my desire to do my best. And I always have my desire to do my best in everything I do. I think, unfortunately, that's why I got an injury on my leg. Because instead of training less, I was trying to become a runner, which I'm not. So, yeah. There are drawbacks, of course, to every advantage.
That you are doing what you are doing in your past and you have work ethic, do you think someone can start it from little by little and build momentum?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's how everything starts, you know? You set yourself a little goal. I think, you know, it should be like with a child or like when people are recovering, let's say, from a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot start running. They have to start learning how to, you know, slowly control their hand. And it's always step by step, yeah? That's how we humans are learning, yeah?
Lev, so let's say you go to training camp, yeah, and you have to work 10 days.
Yes.
So your work ethic is there. You know, 10 days I'm going hardworking. And you wake up in the morning. And you don't want to train. You don't feel you want to train. So what do? You go with your inner feelings or you have already, it's 10 days, I'm going to work?
Well, I try to understand why I don't want to work.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I don't want to work because I don't want to work with this particular person.
Uh-huh.
But actually, so then I try to delegate this person to do something else while I do the work on my own.
Check this variation with Cloud Engine and come back with answers.
Yes, or certain different things. Or, okay, I understand this person is not great in analysis. I say, okay, we'll change it. We'll be playing against each other. We'll be playing some rabbit games. And this, which is also very useful, yeah. So, yeah. But if it's something to do with me, if I have this day of laziness, I try to understand, okay, maybe for many, many months I didn't have a lazy day. Okay, one lazy day is okay.
And did you ever had a period that like 10 days or something? Seems everything is okay in the world, in your world, but something from inner doesn't go.
Yes. No, it happened many times.
And what do you do? Do you just surrender and you don't touch chess, or you keep yourself pushing?
I try to do chess in a different way. You know, when I'm in this mood that I don't want to train, I try to play a lot of blitz or do lots of things that can bring back the passion towards the game. Generally, also like analyzing something that is totally irrelevant can bring the passion back. Yeah, like some opening that you don't play with white or black. Just analyze it to see, to have some ideas about it. You know, just to rekindle this love. And nowadays it's easier, you know. Nowadays, finally, we have Chess 960 that is becoming popular. You can choose one position and analyze it.
Are you happy with this change? I bet you do,
Oh, I'm so happy. Yeah,
yeah.
finally.
Finally, is there. If we had Chess 960 earlier, maybe I would not stop playing professionally. Maybe. I'm not 100 sure. Because one of the things that I was hating, it was these preparation hours, doing things, repeating things that has nothing to do with actual chess understanding of how you see the game. And then you might come to the game, and just because the opponent had a better computer, you would just get crushed and like, what's this? And then you need to repeat and repeat variations just not to be that happen. So
Yeah, and also you're more of a player. You're more of a guy who does things. You're not, I mean, probably you have changed, but back in the day, you were less of a thinker than an action guy. And this was always very refreshing to see a
Can
chess player who
you say it again?
acts.
Can you say it again? I was what?
I always felt that you're more of a person of an action than a person of thinking, you know? You would make an action first, quite often, before you would think over it. And I saw that from you playing sports. This was very typical because, you know, the way chess players play sports, it's kind of a strategizing, and quite often when they have to shoot the freaking ball, they don't do it. And yeah, I always saw that you have a completely different personality from the other guys. And this personality actually I think is very entrepreneurial. Actually I'm sure that to take risky decisions you don't have to sit there and think for years like most people. You go with the flow, I'm sure of it.
That's very interesting. I guess we had spent more time when I was in my 20s, early 20s, and we would play basketball when you were in training camp. I remember those days. But I think you're right that yeah, I was not thinking much, and I took it as not as like I was action guy, but I was bad, and I did too many things without thinking. And one of the key moments in my life, it was becoming a grandmaster. But it turned different way, because I thought I will become a grandmaster, so I will be happy. That's the answer. I become a grandmaster, and then I was like, where is the happiness? Give me my happiness. There should be happiness. And at the same time, after a few days, everything started to collapse. And then when I looked back at myself, I realized how bad person I became, how egoistic, selfish, ungrateful. And it took me many, many years to, I started the journey, but it took me years to recover, come back. And since I started the journey, many things changed. And now looking back to that, yeah, I did. I was action guy and I talked often stupid things without analyzing, without, and yeah, it also went into the game. To your bat.
But it's a great quality. It's a great quality. I mean,
yeah,
you,
yeah,
if you,
yeah,
can
self-analyze, yeah, you mean. Yeah. To your bat, if I take risk easier, yeah, I think now I am somewhere in balance. I have some balance between thinking, also taking action and not thinking forever and being perfectionism and just forever doing that. So yeah, maybe I'm in the middle and I'm taking some big, big moves that often people are like, what's the behind? And I'm like, don't ask me. Or if someone asks me, like, what's the calculation behind that move? Like often business people asks, tell me the numbers. How do you predict them? Like, I don't know. Just gut feeling. Just I'm doing. Don't ask me. And also I'm like very blessed to have investors who are not pushing me for such things. They're like, okay, we trust that. So, yeah. It's interesting that you were observing and seeing me that way. And now when you said, I never thought of me like I had such problem. If you told me that Avo like gave me some advice back then, like 15 years ago, maybe things would be a bit different. Do you give
but
such
you
advice
know,
to
I,
younger
I,
or you just leave them to go with their way and understand them?
Yes, I think if you advise people, you know, then they, I think it might make them boring. Not everybody have to be in the same style. They have to find their own way. They have to find their own energy, the vibe. That's the beauty of the world, yes? That you have some dogs that are very, very friendly and some dogs that are very cautious but very loyal. So different. All animals are different. All humans should be different. And me as a person who loves the nature and I love to observe lots of things. Yes, that's what I enjoy the most. To see the character in people, different characters.
Even if not all goes from your heart, but see the variance, yeah?
Yeah, because like I'm a guy who listens to a lot of classical music.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have a particular piece, let's say Mozart's Fifth Piano Concerto,
mm-hmm.
and you have 40 famous recordings of different 40 pianists with mm-hmm. different 40 orchestras or maybe less orchestras. And then you kind of look at it and you want to know, aha, okay, very interesting. This is their approach. This is the same ideas. And this is this person's approach. And, you know, you find it's fascinating to do that, you know, to compare and understand what's closer to you. Of course, it's also a big waste of the time, but so is the art.
Levon, by the way, about the interest, like I was always fascinated, especially back then, how many interests you had, how many things you were going deeper, not just, okay, I love jazz, you would dive deeper into understanding jazz and everything you touched. I felt like you go very deep, and from philosophy to sports, everywhere, yeah? And at the same time, for many, it would be like, how does he do that? And we need to train chess, but instead of training chess, he goes and he does all those things. Yeah. So did I feel this correctly, that you were training less than your peers of your level, but at the same time, you got some things that it was completely compensating that training?
That's the thing. I never thought that I'm doing something that is useful, but I can't help myself. I'm addicted to learning things about the world, learning about culture. And I just get so incredibly bored if I suppress myself. If I don't learn something new about music or cinema or art every single day, you know, I feel unfulfilled in a way. So I want to learn things, and I'm excited about things.
If you didn't have all these interests, do you think that you would be world champion long ago?
Well, definitely it was a problem for me. Definitely. Mm. I mean, spending so much time on things that have nothing to do with your profession. But, you know, that's the curiosity. That's what I have to sacrifice, you know, to feel good.
You were number two player, and you were way above 28. What happened? Something happened?
Oh, you mean the drop?
Yes.
Well, I think I didn't utilize the option to become a better player. I didn't. I think I came too late to understanding that psychology plays a huge role. And also, I didn't understand that the truth should come first before love.
Okay, elaborate on this more, how it is relevant to that one.
Well, I mean, I knew that there are certain problems. I knew that, okay, if I look at myself as a chess player or my discipline or my physical state,
mm-hmm.
I'm not fully dedicated to it. I'm not working very hard. I'm just giving myself love. I'm telling myself, yes, it's good enough. 3 hours a day is good enough. I can dedicate my time and, you know, I'm playing well. I love where I am. I'm, you know, I was not looking at it from a critical point first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, telling myself, okay, if you continue working 3 hours a day and analyzing all the same openings instead of learning new openings, although you know that this is necessary, but you're limiting yourself. And eventually what will happen, people will start hitting you in the same opening. They will never be surprised by your choices. And eventually you're going to drop down. So it's normal. That's the truth. But yes, I wasn't applying the truth. I was applying the self-love, and that's why I couldn't fight to be you know, a world champion or be on the very top.
What a deep answer, man. I remember you also told me about that you were switching from D4 to E4 because you were feeling that you need to play those positions, and for that transition, you should go low at some point in order to come back. So like in kind of way, you need to make one step back in order to make two step forward.
I also think like it's never late to switch. It's never late to learn new things. And at that moment, I felt I'm bored. And if you get bored with your work, if your work is, mm-hmm. you're not inventing new things in your field, then you will slowly lose your advantage that you have. No matter how hard you work, you know, you will be just doing the same stuff.
So, once I was sitting and thinking and also writing an article, like, I became a grandmaster at 19, what I could do better and when I could be. Eventually, I calculated all my mistakes, all my stupidities, and if I did ideally, I realized I would be grandmaster at 13 or 14.
Mm.
So, now that you have gone through so many trials and errors, you went through so many different things, what are the other things that you would do differently? If you bring the time back and we want Levon Aronyan, I want to become the world champion. Just on that part. I'm not about that. Would it give you the happiness or fulfillment or not? But imagine you want.
Yes, it's just the goal.
Just improvement part, yeah? So looking at the truth to the face, it's one thing I understood, yeah? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
And what are the
yes,
other things
definitely.
That
I would
you
also
do?
I would also demand more from my seconds. I would demand more from myself. and I would just generally to demand more from my entourage, people that surround me. I would ask them to, you know, okay, you need to do this, you need to do that. And that's how it would be. So, because I do believe I had the talent to be a world champion. Maybe I will become, you know. I am, as people say, you know, this and that. Sometimes people ask me, what were you doing when you were up and coming? And I say, I'm still up and coming. You know, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can always be up and coming. Yeah. So, yeah, I think I would definitely be more more disciplined. This was definitely missing.
And as I understood, ask truth not just for yourself, but from your team, yeah? From the
yes,
people who is
I would,
around.
Yes. I would be more kind of strict, more kind of demanding. And, you know, this is always a very difficult part in life. When you have to create a conflict to solve a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, this is one of the typical ways of making a, how it's called in English, movement, yeah?
Yes.
Classic.
Yeah, because it's impossible otherwise, yeah? Quite often. And I was always bad at this. I was always looking for harmony. And quite often, this is not really a harmony. This is just, you're just postponing the tough decision. And you're losing time.
When I was playing chess,
like if you have, let's say, a car that you know that in 3 years' time this car is not gonna function, and you know it for sure, and you're kind of telling yourself continuously, "Oh, let's wait. Maybe things will change. Maybe you know."
Yeah.
And at that moment, of course, you need to change it. And to change it as soon as you can till it still has a price.
When I was playing, so I had friends with whom we would work, but I didn't have seconds, so I cannot relate everything in chess ways. Yet at the same time, I can relate what you are saying now, because as I'm growing chess mode, I have teammates, we are working together, and often I have that issue, how to find the balance between demanding, between guys we are going further together, and also finding this joy, and often what you want, what is your dream, and you are going with your dreams, and you're trying to go according to your value hierarchies, you catch the wind, but it's not the same for other, and there is a very difficult part. So as I'm understanding, often people might feel like become the world champion with talent and hard work, but there are other skills, and one of the skills can be leadership, surprisingly. Who could imagine that leadership has to do something of being individual strong chess player, right? So if it's team championship, okay, understandable, but individual chess game, who could think that leadership will be important to get to the top?
Yeah, because leadership qualities, you're affecting yourself, yes? And you're also, if your opponents, this, I always felt this, you know? If I felt that my opponent is the way he's shaking his hands, the way he's looking at me, and quite often I would immediately feel the initiative, you know? So with certain players, you can immediately see their leadership qualities are lower. And they are not coming there to give you a challenge, and they're there to play on a counterattack. But still, you could immediately feel from their demeanor that you are the leader and they're not. Like in a dance, you're going to take them there. Yeah, and I think that's what you're saying is very true. Like chess. If you understand it well, it does develop those leadership skills, and those leadership skills you can use everywhere, because the leadership skills are, you know, I remember this. There is this parable. I don't know if I'm telling you too many stories and parables.
Tell me, please. The more you tell it, the more I will take to my life.
So this is the one about Rumi. You know.
Okay. Yes, of course.
The founder of Sufism. Yes. And I love this story, and you probably know this one. So there is a woman who comes with her child to Rumi. This is an example of leadership. She says, Mevla now, my son eats too many sweets.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he says, okay, I can talk to him, but come back in a week. She comes back in a week and he says, sorry, you have to come back in next week. And on the next week, she comes back to her son and Rumi tells the son, okay, you eat too many sweets. It's not good for you. You know, it's not good for your teeth and just generally for your blood sugar, I guess. Well, and so the woman leaves. And then Rumi's friend says, okay, what happened? Why didn't you tell it in the start? He said, well, before I told it, I thought to myself and I realized that I had the same problem. And I needed 2 weeks to get rid of this problem before I took advice. And that's what leadership is. You know, you cannot tell somebody, hey, you're not working hard enough. You're not following your discipline and just be a boss. If they don't see, if you don't lead by example, it will not help. And I think, for example, that's the reason why we were so successful in the Olympiads, I think, as an Armenian team. Because we always led by example to younger players.
Yeah. Yes. When I was at only time I was in the team, I saw something there that Armenian team was we were doing, and then I didn't see any other team doing that how we were going every lunch together, every dinner together, and walking together after every lunch and dinner. So even last time when we were in Budapest, and this is my third Olympiad, and then I was as a guest, I had more time to observe.
Yes.
And I was not seeing such things that Armenian team had. And here, of course, comes lots of credits to you as you were leading the team. And it was so beautiful that just that thing together.
Yes, and we did it forever. You know, we're going to the... I remember... I would always go to the sport base, you know, in Zakhazar.
Yeah.
And quite often the guys wouldn't come. They would say, the food there is terrible. And, oh my God. And they would be, no, we don't want that. And one time, one of my friends who I work with said, why are we going there? The place is expensive. The food is terrible. You know, what's the point? And I told them, you know, this is a kind of a place where we were together. The food is terrible for both of us. And we're kind of staying true to ourselves. This is what we did before. This is what helped us. And, you know, we're just being kind of reserved. We're accepting that things are not easy in the world. So maybe having some... not the best food is actually good for us to appreciate the good things. You know, like in Stoicism, like for example, the main thing in Stoicism is once a week you need to sleep uncomfortably.
Yeah.
You know, just to build your character. So some people, it can do magic.
Yeah. My friend, I will ask later for the second episode, especially after I will sleep a little bit with the idea of your truth and love. Meanwhile, I will ask you the last question, which I always ask to our guests. So most of our listeners are adult improvers who enjoys the chess, but at the same time, they have goals and dreams that often it sucks the joy from the game.
Hmm.
So when I am saying something, it's another story. When you are saying something, it's another story. So I want to hear your advice.
When I think about somebody who wants to become better at chess, I look at this. I first ask him a question. Why do you want to become better at chess? And when they know the answer, okay, to beat my uncle or to be the best player in the club. And then I ask them the second question. How much time can you dedicate to your goals? You know? Or how much passion? You know? And because you cannot kind of tell to yourself, oh, I want to become a grandmaster and say, but I have 20 minutes of time a day to dedicate. Because it's, you know, it cannot be like that. Yeah? So I think it's important to understand your goals as somebody who wants to improve. It's important to understand how much energy you can dedicate and move accordingly. Because improving in something, it doesn't mean that I have to be the best player in the world. Because when I want to improve, I myself want to improve as a tennis player. I don't go there thinking that I'm going to play in the Grand Slam next. I want to improve to beat Fabi. And he wants to improve to beat me. I'm never in my mind keeping that. I want to improve as good to play against our friend, yeah, Grant Milkman. Because there is no chance I'm going to catch up his 10 years of training every day.
Yes.
Yeah.
But Fabio can, yeah?
Fabio can.
Lev, you know, if you ask to AI what is the most common question Avo asks, you bet, yeah, what I am asking the students who are having some goals. It's what's your why? This is exactly how I go, and it was fascinating to hear the same answer from you. Are you familiar with Simon Sinek, Find Your Why book?
No.
Yeah, he has also a famous TED Talk. He later wrote a book about finding your why and how it is important to find the why. And then also there is this 5-why technique, which goes very deep inside to understand your why. So why, yeah? Like, okay, I want to become better at tennis. Why? I want to beat Fabi. Why you want to beat Fabi? Because of the why, etc. And then you get to the real source. And then you understand if this real source worth spending my time and effort and energy. And then you realize, do I want to spend or not?
Sure.
But at least you are honest with you. You know exactly why. And then you go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I want to beat Fabi because I, without beating him, I tell the whole world that I'm beating him. So I want to beat him in order to have the confirmation. I already bragged and trash talked in advance. Now I need the support.
Yeah. Good way to put yourself in a bad position in order so you have no other backward, you burn the bridges. All right, my friend. On our next episode, I will ask you if you beat him. Meanwhile, big thanks, man.
Thank you
very much. That thing I'm going to think about, we'll come back to that. Thank you very much for finding time in all your interest in your chess improvement, in your family life, finding time and coming.
It's always a pleasure to talk to a friend.
Thank you very much, my friend. Champions, thank you for trusting your time to listen to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it and found something to take with you both for your chess journey and your life. If something stood out or made you think, I would love to hear it. Drop in the comments, please. And if you have not yet, please subscribe to the channel so you don't miss the next episode. Stay awesome. Until next time, my friend.